Well, the state assembly has been going at it all night long as lawmakers are trying to wrap up the 2011-2012 legislative session. We'll talk about what the legislature has accomplished and what it has not during this March Madness edition of the Week in Review. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, March the 16th, and we will talk about the madness going on at the state capitol. We'll talk about this wacky weather we're experiencing during this last official week of winter. We'll talk about the real March Madness just a little bit, about our obsession with brackets these days, and all of the other top state, national, and international news stories of the week. And we welcome your input, 1-800-642-1234. What issue from the news this week do you want our guests to tackle? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. You can also tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Ed Filone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, is with us. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Margaret Farrow is with us, former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Ed.
Morning.
Well, let's break the ice, so to speak, just talking about this weather. Have you ever felt anything like this, Ed Filone?
Well, I moved to the state in 1992, and this is the nicest spring I can recall, and I really hope it cools off, otherwise everyone's going to move to our state.
Margaret Farrow, are you happy with this, record-breaking temperatures during this last official week of winter, or does it worry you a little bit?
Oh, my God, it doesn't worry me. I think it's fine. We have had warm spells before. The fact that we've strung a bunch of them together this year, and I think we're going to set a record possibly of being 1 degree over the normal warm spring for a March spring here, doesn't tell me that anything's happening except a wonderful spring for Wisconsin. I can remember having a grandson's birthday on April 1st out on our patio with all the furniture already out. So we tend to think we have horrible winters every year, and we don't.
Yeah. The only thing that worries me is that the mosquitoes are out already.
I'll give you that.
Well, and I'm wondering, before we get into the heavy political talk, Ed Filone, are you involved in the March Madness? Do you have a bracket? Are you rooting for Marquette, who apparently won yesterday and is going to be, I don't know who they're playing tomorrow, but you might.
They're playing Murray State, and yes, I'm contractually obligated to root for Marquette in every game. So I have them winning the entire tournament.
Well, there you go. And I don't know, Margaret Farrow, if you're rooting for the Badgers.
No, I'm with Ed because my husband and I graduated from Marquette.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Our first date was a Marquette basketball game, and we've been rooting for them ever since. In fact, three of my sons and I were at the 2003 Final Four in New Orleans, and I wish everybody well who's going to be going to the Final Four this year, because I never do a bracket because within one series of games I'm out. So I just love to watch the others kind of foolishly try to guess who's going to do what.
That is great. Well, I didn't know that. You learn something new every day. Well, thanks to both of you for being here. Now let's talk about the madness going on at the Capitol. And I'm not saying that with any political perspective, but there's been a big marathon session at the Capitol. The Assembly is still in session, going all night long trying to finish up legislative business for this session. The Senate, I think, officially adjourned yesterday, but the Assembly is still working. Margaret Farrell, what are your thoughts on whether this was a successful session or not, just in general?
Well, I think looking at the business that was done, rather than the climate, I think it was successful because, first of all, we're sitting now with a balanced budget. We're sitting with over $3 billion in deficit having been taken care of without raising taxes. We have had a number of bipartisan bills pass through the House, which everybody quickly forgets, And I know I've just seen recently that in the last several days, the majority leader, Senator Fitzgerald, made the comment that 90%, or I think you might have even said a little over 90% of the bills that have been passed by the Senate this year have had some bipartisan support. And if anybody remembers back a year ago, January, when they first started the effort, there were a number of things done to improve the business climate, the job development climate of the state that were strongly bipartisan. And I think it's unfortunate it took the turn it did, and people have just said, no, we're not going to cooperate because we don't like these bills. And I was in the minority for a number of the years when I was in the legislature. I know how patient the minority often has to be to wait to get back in the majority. This minority will not be patient. This minority, they right now are sitting through the night, as you said, slowing everything down with needless amendments that go nowhere, and they're going to have 70 amendments by one member alone, Corey Mason, Representative Corey Mason from Racine, on that MATC bill. Tell me where that moves anything along.
Can you tell us that, Ed Falone?
Well, I mean, Ms. Farrow knows well how government works, and it used to work responsibly when you have bills that are written in secret and foisted on the public with very little notice, and then no amendments are allowed, no hearings, or else hearings are put on a very fast schedule and very inconvenient locations. Votes are hurried along. That's not the way the government process is supposed to work, and I think that that's why we've had such difficulty. I think, you know, the legislative process is designed to allow compromise, to allow input even from the minority, so that what comes out at the end of the process is something that is broadly acceptable. This is not a game where, you know, when I get elected, I get to enact anything I want, and then the minority is supposed to wait until they win an election, and then they get to enact anything they want. The way I look at it, government is a public trust. When I hand the keys to my car to someone, I expect them to drive it responsibly. The Republicans came into office, and they immediately began a far-right extreme agenda. And it's government doesn't work that way. You have to compromise, and you have to have broad-based public support.
Well, Margaret,
could I remind the audience that the last budget that Governor Doyle did was passed without a hearing, brought out one day, passed the next day with no hearing. So when you speak to the Republicans as doing that, they learn from their Democratic brothers.
Let me, Margaret Farrow, have you respond to Assembly Minority Leader Peter Barca of Kenosha said that Democrats would be willing to stop this amendment thing, blocking the progress, but only if Republicans drop their attempt to overhaul the board at the Milwaukee Area Technical College. He says that this is a power grab. Republicans say that this would make MATC more responsible. But Peter Barca says, we are here at 6 in the morning, well, that was 2 hours ago, because you made a decision to stick it to Milwaukee. Can you help us understand what's going on there?
Well, and I have not talked to Senator Grossman. This is Senator Grossman's bill. I think what he has seen and what he's reacting to is the call from the business community in the greater Milwaukee area saying that they would like to have graduates coming out of that institution truly prepared to help and become really productive employees, that there are jobs waiting right now, to everyone's surprise, I'm sure. But there aren't qualified people to take them in the production area, in all sorts of areas, in business in the greater Milwaukee area. They feel that if there were more business people on that board where their graduates would be going, it would perhaps have the curriculum and have the whole experience of the students become more meaningful. I believe that's what Senator Grossman was getting at, and there would be an expanded number of business representatives on the board. I think that's where he began. I think he looked to the county board rather than the school board to understand that as the appointing body. And I think anything is worth trying, and I think it's absolutely fallacious to say that the group would lose, that the school would lose its FTC license for their public television, because they would still have a board governing them with all the same responsibilities in the same manner.
Do you have any thoughts on this MATC issue, Ed Falone?
Well, I think MATC has been successfully operated. It's a very good technical college. The board does well. I'm not aware of any criticisms, scandals, problems, other than the business community would like this publicly funded educational institution to be transformed into basically a publicly funded jobs training program for private business. It's an educational institution. The board has some very highly qualified individuals. They run it appropriately with accountability and oversight. I don't see any reason to attack MATC other than to get back at once again. It seems like the rest of the state has something that they don't like about the Milwaukee area, and everything seems to come at a price for Milwaukee. Where's the need? Where's the problem that they're trying to fix?
Let's. We have to talk about some of the other pieces of legislation that have passed in the last couple of days in this last week of the legislative session. There were some social issues that passed, including a change, a repeal of what was the state's Comprehensive Sex Education Act. This change would allow abstinence-only education in the schools. Margaret Farrell, quick thoughts on that.
Well, I think what it's doing is introducing another option that isn't there right now, and that is to look at that abstinence only as one of the things that young people should have presented to them, rather than starting in some low grade with the whole spiel of birth control and contraception and condoms and everything else as the only thing they were hearing in public school. There's an awful lot of people having their children in public school who are have a very different focus on these issues, and they would like to have the chance, at least the chance, to have abstinence only. This is not mandating it. This is adding to the menu of what could be available in schools. And I have no problem with that at all. I think it's sad that it hasn't been.
Any problem with that, Ed Filone?
Well, no. My problem is simply with this idea that we're going to try to regulate or dictate our children's entire exposure to human sexuality through the school system. You can teach birth control in the schools, but every parent I know talks to their kids about being responsible, waiting, and not necessarily engaging in sexual relations at an early age. So, yes, parents have to be involved. Your religious affiliation is important, but to try and pretend that we're just going to set a series of mandates on the school system and that they're going to handle everything, it's short-sighted and it's not reality.
There were also,
but this isn't a mandate. This is there has been a mandate that it couldn't be taught. This is allowing and saying this could now be taught. I think I kind of agree with that. I think we should have it all relate back to the home, the family, and perhaps in many cases their church. We have the mandate. We just are adding another option to it.
Well, obviously, no one is preventing you from telling your children how they should behave responsibly in the human sexuality area. No one prevents me from saying that. So it's a question of what's in the curriculum at school. But parents are always free to tell their kids how to behave and to put expectations on their children.
Here's another bill that passed this week. Moving on, that it would bar private insurers from covering abortions if that insurer is participating in a health care exchange created by the new federal health law. Ed Filone, your thoughts on that?
Well, this provision is one of these odd things chipping away at the accessibility to abortion services. I think the important thing for everyone to understand is that the federal and state government do not subsidize any abortion services except in the case of rape, incest, or where it's necessary to save the life of the woman. We have these health insurance exchanges that are being set up as part of the Affordable Care Act. They're to provide options to bring private insurers together and provide options for Medicaid and presumably Badger Care people to choose a health insurance provider. And by banning any private insurer from participating in this segment of the market, unless they drop abortion services from their coverage, you're trying to use exclusion from this market to influence private insurers to stop covering abortion services. And, you know, this is just something that will end up making abortion more expensive for low-income women, even when they're seeking it because of rape or because of health complications. If their insurer doesn't offer the services, then they're going to have to pay more out of their own pocket. So, you know, again, we're just trying to chip away at something here. There's not any problem that we're trying to solve. It's just part of an overall attempt to discourage private businesses from insuring this particular health care issue.
Margaret Farrell?
Well, I think, first of all, we maybe are a little premature with this because we don't have the private exchange yet. We don't know if we're going to have them. We don't know if there will be a change in Washington this coming fall, and that might change the whole landscape for the exchange idea, which is still very much in its infant stage. And in this state especially, along with a number of other states, has not begun because of the entire challenge in the federal, in the Supreme Court, at the Supreme Court level of Obamacare. So I think this is something that's a little premature.
Yeah, there was another bill that the legislature was working on that would require a doctor to meet with a woman seeking an abortion within 24 hours of that abortion. And there's a lot of concern, Margaret Farrell, I'll have you start on this first, that this is what Ed Filone was saying, was chipping away, that there's a lot of legislation, not only in Wisconsin, but in states all over the country that are trying to block access or to make it as hard as possible for a woman to get a legal abortion. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I guess most of your audience probably knows, so I'll be straight out. I'm pro-life. I see abortion as actually taking a life and something a woman should take very seriously. They say they're about women's right to control their own body. I'm concerned about the women that never will see the light of day because they're aborted before they're alive or have a chance to be alive. So that's where I'm coming from in replying to this. Any medical procedure, and this certainly is a medical procedure that has all sorts of emotional, hormonal, physical reactions and results, I think has to have the direct relationship to a doctor and his assessment of it, not his reading something on his computer and then shooting back a Skype or something that says, yeah, that woman can abort her fetus. I don't understand why they wouldn't be involved except to make it easier for the groups that are doing the abortion. In other words, who is doing the actual abortion? I'm very concerned, and I would have voted in favor of this.
Mm-hmm. Ed Filone?
Well, this is all about restricting access, and in particular for low-income women. Middle-income and higher-income women are always going to be able to get access to abortions. They always have. They always will. It's low-income women who really can't. And here it's about how much we limit the ability of these women to clinics that are relatively close by. Right now, there's none of this video monitor consulting going on in the state because we have abortion clinics located throughout the state, and low-income women can find one relatively close. But in many states, because of funding restrictions and cuts and other reasons, women have to travel great distances to go to a clinic. And so, you know, in those states, some kind of a video consulting might make sense. I'm not saying it would make sense here in Wisconsin. I'm just saying that what these people are doing is they're anticipating ahead. You cut the funding for the clinics so that there are fewer and fewer. Low-income women have to go further and further. There's no ability for any consultation via video monitor. And then we're not talking about invasive surgery here. We're talking about oftentimes the administration of a drug and early-stage abortion. So, you know, again, this is simply step by step. We see this going on in other states. There's an agenda here, and it's to make it harder for low-income women to find medical care related to abortion.
The legislature modified a change to Badger Care this week. The original plan from the governor would have taken over 60,000 people off the Badger Care rolls. The legislature's plan will remove 23,000. Is this a big deal, Ed Filone?
Well, I mean, you know, what we see here is just simple budget reality. It's very misleading to talk about the state being broke because a state that has taxing authority is never broke. This is all about your funding priorities and where you shift the money. And, you know, the current budget shifts the burden, the financial burden, away from business and higher-income residents, gives everyone a modest property tax break, and increasingly shifts the burden onto the backs of low-income people. You know, you have a choice here. Health care is getting more expensive. Badger care, therefore, is more expensive to provide to low-income people. You can either raise taxes to help cover that increase in health care costs, or hold taxes steady and drop people off the rolls in order to allow premiums to stay the same because you're covering fewer people, or continue to cover the same amount of people but have them pay more in premiums, which is regressive because this is low-income people that you're trying to help stay employed and stay in the job market. So all we're doing is shifting burdens around, and right now all the burdens keep landing on the back of the low-income.
Margaret Farrell.
Well, I guess the headlines say that they're cut, 23,000 are cut from coverage. That is, well, it's not the right headline, because what they're, just as Ed said, what they're being asked to do, those people, and I think it's 185% of poverty level, they are being asked to pay a small, literally a small amount of their own money to help cover some of their medical costs and take some responsibility for their medical care, as the rest of the population above that level does, and the ones that have the Medicaid. We are, as a state, we have a higher level of participation in Medicaid and through our Badger Care, our family care, than any other state. We have more people being cared for that way. Wisconsin, traditionally, before and since that program began, has the lowest number of uninsured just about in the entire country. So this is saying, put in some of your own money. Yes, you have to reassess your budget. But if we don't do this, if we don't start controlling the costs, as Ed said, he may say, well, we are never broke. Well, we may as a state have the taxing authority. The people we're taxing are ultimately going to be broke if the state isn't responsible as to how they're spending the public dollars.
Margaret Farrell is a former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin. Ed Filone is an Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University. They are our guests for this edition of the Week in Review. We have lots of other state issues to cover after this break, including the bill that would allow a wolf hunt passing the assembly this week. Is the law that would make it easier and faster to open a mine, an iron ore mine in Wisconsin, down but not out. A recall date has been set. Recall dates have been set, and voter ID is blocked in Wisconsin. Just some of the issues that we will cover as the Week in Review continues. What else? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up Monday at this time, I'll talk with a Wisconsin author about a new book on the joys of recovering from addiction. She'll share stories and advice coming up Monday after 8 o'clock. This is our Week in Review, where we talk with two guests from different political viewpoints each week about the top stories in the news each week. Today we are talking with Ed Filone and Margaret Farrell, and with you. And we will try to do a lightning round on some of these other state issues that were in the news in the state of Wisconsin this week. One of the biggest stories this week is a bill that didn't pass. In fact, last week, the company that was interested in opening up a big iron ore mine in northern Wisconsin said, see you later. We're not interested in opening up this mine anymore, since the Senate rejected a bill that would have made it easier and quicker to open up that mine. But this week, Governor Walker said, well, he would hold a special session of the legislature, or call a special session of the legislature, if one senator would change his mind, or her mind, I guess. The vote was 17-16, and it was against the mine, but it's just, it was so close. He said, if we can get one more Democrat or Republican to vote for this mining bill, he'd call a special session. Is this a mining issue over or not, Margaret Farrell?
Well, I would hope not. But I think we have to deal with reality and see what can be done. I think this is, you know, again, This is an issue that, unfortunately, in the partisan world, we are not dealing with the issue. We're dealing with the politics. And the politics are the Democrats will not give Governor Walker any success at all if they can prevent it. And especially because now they have this very unusual recall looming on the horizon. They don't want to make him look good anywhere. And for that, they would sacrifice who knows how many thousand jobs. I mean, everybody's got different numbers, but it would be a trickle-down effect to the entire state of the growth of it. I guess I have a kind of a philosophical attitude toward mining that I've had since I was in the legislature. We have the toughest mining laws in the country, which is why we're sitting on so much ore deposits and nothing, very little is being happened. We have some mining being done, I grant you. The glacier formed our state. Compacted things, left things as it both advanced and then removed itself from our area. That in that process, we are given through that amazing thing all of this ore that is in our ground, both from the southwest corner of the state all the way up to the northernmost corner of the state. We also from that glacier got farming, because we have this wonderful soil in the spots where it drops soil. Now, the farming has polluted, and we've been working it for over three decades lately to clean up any pollution of our waterways with farming. My question is, why is mining, if it is so controlled in our state as it is, if this mine was approved by the EPA, the DNR, and the Army Corps of Engineers would do the final approval on it, why is that any different? Why can we not benefit from that glacier-given benefit?
Murphy, let me ask, just follow up. You said the Democrats are doing this. In this particular case, it was Republican State Senator Dale Schultz who said he didn't think that the Assembly bill was environmentally responsible.
And to do that, you're saying that would be the business as usual and have a totally partisan vote of all Republicans and all Democrats. My point is, there were Democrats who represent areas, especially down here in the Milwaukee area, that have the benefit of the mining equipment areas. There was Senator Tim Carpenter, who rumor has it, was going to vote in favor of this. We have Senator Chris Larson, the new very vocal senator, who represents the very area where those machining companies are for the equipment. If there couldn't be a bipartisan vote on this, then we're left with what we have, a senator who, in his moderate attitude, has gone the way he has. My question is, why weren't those Democrats willing to vote for it? Because even though the merit was there, they weren't going to give it to Governor Walker, in my opinion.
Ed Fallon.
Well, Ms. Farrow has sort of undermined everything she just said. I think there was a lot of support in the Senate for a compromise bill, and I think if a compromise bill was put forward, it would probably pass. You only have to get one Republican, and I think a compromise bill would pick up more Democrats, and it would not be a partisan bill. I think the problem is that the bill was written by the mining company. It was produced as a fait accompli, no changes, no compromise, absolute refusal to talk about the issue, and that's a recipe for disaster. And I think this really was a top legislative priority for the governor, like he says, first of all, he should have stayed in the state more and worked the legislature and tried to find common ground instead of running around the country raising money. And second of all, you have to be willing to find common ground. You have to be willing to give a little. You can't just say it's my way or the highway, and when people refuse that ultimatum, point the finger and accuse them of partisan politics.
Well, my answer would be the joint finance draft or amendment to the original bill did compromise a number of the 11 issues that Senator Jauch and Senator Schultz brought forward. And I guess the question would be, who knows more about mining, the economics of mining, than the mining companies? Tim Sullivan, who ran the company that built the machining for worldwide need for mining and is still head of our mining association in the state, worked closely with it. He's now on no pay working for business issues for Governor Walker, and he reviewed this, worked on it, and was involved in those talks, and I'm sure at the direction of Governor Walker. Governor Walker was involved. He wasn't out of the state all of the time. He isn't you know, making headlines here in the state when he's here, and the only reason he has to go out and raise money is because the other side has brought a recall against him, and he has to somehow be sure he can defend it against the national union money.
Let's take a call on this issue. Jim in Ashland. Hi, Jim.
Hi. A couple things about the mining situation and the Northland. I think I heard Senator Farrow say something to the effect that nobody knows more about mining than mining bills, but nobody knows more about the environment and the real job situation up here than the people that live here. And the Republicans like to justify everything by job growth. But something like was proposed in the original mining bill would have been short-term jobs. It would have been a major change in environmental quality, and then the mine is gone. And there are local economies of agriculture, logging, and tourism that would be damaged, not to mention the water supply that serves the whole region.
Yeah, Jim, let me jump in.
Just a minute. I've got a whole lot more to say.
No, we don't have time for a whole lot more to say. I'm sorry. I was going to ask you to comment on a very related story, but you gave us a lot. Thank you very much. My related story was whether Jim and Ashland would support a threatened recall of State Senator Bob Jauch, who represents the area. There is a Milwaukee-based group that is saying it's going to announce next week whether it will initiate a recall of Senator Jauch over his vote on this bill. Ed Filone, your thoughts on that?
I think, I thought Republicans were opposed to one-issue recalls, but I think that, in this state we like legislative officials who are independent, who think for themselves. And anyone who is facing a recall because of one vote, I think, can still rely on the goodwill of most people of the state because, like I said, they like independent thinkers. That's the job of the legislature, is to look at the big picture, to take account of the different groups, like the caller said, take account of the farming interests, take account of those people who like the wildlife resources and want them to stay the same, take account of the economic interests. We don't elect legislators to hand the ball over to private industry and say, here, you write your own laws. So I think that as long as the legislators are acting in the public trust, I think that the voters will understand that.
Yeah. Margaret Farrell, brief comments on that. We do need to move on to other issues.
Okay, I just find it absolutely fascinating that we can have a recall for a budget vote and having collective bargaining be this focus on that issue. And now we have Senator Jauch should not be recalled, Ed Filone says, because of one vote and independent thinking. I just stand in utter dismay, and I don't think I was the only one of two senators that visited the Flambeau Mine in Ladysmith. Nothing polluted as a result of that mine. I drank a glass of water that came out of the sump water system, the sewage treatment system that treated the sump coming out of that well. It was 10 feet from the Flambeau River. It was absolutely in no way ever bothering the Flambeau River, and it was an open copper mine, similar to the open mining that this would be. I just find it amazing if people would get their facts and understand today's mining procedures, and it wouldn't be short-term. Decades, up to seven decades, to me, isn't short-term. It's the span of my life, and I think I've had a pretty good life.
Let's go to another issue from Linda in Pewaukee. Hi, Linda.
Hello, thank you for this opportunity to talk to your guests. I would like to say that I'm a lifelong Wisconsin resident. I grew up in a hunting and trapping family, and I enjoy our state and its natural resources and our wildlife, and I am very much opposed to the wolf hunting bill for the following reasons: the use of dogs, traps, bait, night hunting, shooting from roadways, and the reimbursement for hunting dogs that are injured by wolves during the hunting of other species. I've attended the hearing. I've listened to a lot of testimony. I've learned a lot. I believe this bill is not about depredation or stewardship, and our wildlife biologists seem to agree with that. This is a special interest bill that was written by Republicans, bear hunters, Safari Club International, the NRA, and the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. And I would like to ask your guests, with all of the experts coming out in opposition to this bill, how can it be defended? And I would also like to know, for the majority of Wisconsin citizens who just like to enjoy the outdoors, how can we have any influence? How can we make our voices heard? And, you know, where is our say in these kinds of issues?
Because Thank you very much, Linda. Margaret Farrell, you want to address that first?
Well, Linda and I apparently live in the same community, unless she's in the village. I'm in the city of Pewaukee. There are nights when I hear coyotes and wolves. I see wolves and I hear coyotes. I remember those same experts that she's quoting from, and maybe it wasn't the same actual one, but the classification of experts that said our poor wildlife with urban sprawl are just going to be devastated, the deer, all their habitats. We have deer walking through our yard every night. They know how to adapt to us. Reintroduction of animals into a habitat that Mother Nature removed them from, for whatever reason, their chain of, you know, who was their enemy. I have always been troubled by that. I was troubled, quite frankly, when we reintroduced the elk to the state, because they have been gone for years. They're doing okay, I guess. In fact, probably some would say very well. Sandhill cranes, we made every opportunity to make sure they could get back in the state safely, and they did. And now they're stripping farmers grains and other products to a devastating amount. They know how to deal with us better than we seem to know how to deal with them. If the bill goes too far, it'll be amended. It'll be adjusted in following sessions, as we see our deer hunt constantly being adjusted. So wolves have become a problem in the state. And I think the neighborhood dogs that I have heard reacting to both the coyotes and the wolves as they're screaming and breathing their last are a proof that something has to be done.
Ed Filone, your thoughts on the wolf hunt?
Well, the goal is management of the wolf population, not elimination. And so if the hunt needs to take place, we need to manage the wolf population. But I think that there's a long history of people who are afraid of wolves or have negative connotations of wolves and would be more than happy to eliminate the population. So I think we have to resist that. From what I understand, the bill, you know, there is some concern that the season is too long, that it extends into the breeding season, and that you know, will make it difficult for wolves to reproduce and therefore will lead to a decline in the population beyond management levels. And I think, you know, it's just common sense to try and get that balance correct.
Okay, we are going to talk about many more issues after this break. We're going to talk about voter ID and the recall dates, and certainly the latest in the presidential election as well. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine with Ed Filone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, and Margaret Farrell, former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, and it's time for the Week in Review quiz. If you think you know the answer to this question, you can call us or email us, and we will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers at the end of the program, and we will offer you a book that we featured on the program recently. Here's the Week in Review quiz. On Wednesday, President Obama welcomed Prime Minister David Cameron to the White House to discuss some policy matters. The president also gave him a gift consisting of a couple of official White House chef jackets. And what else? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is The Week in Review, talking today with Ed Filone and Margaret Farrow, and lots of issues still to discuss and not very much time. Let's talk about the recall dates being set by the Government Accountability Board. We're going to have, I believe, a primary on May the 5th and the general on June the 8th. What do you think of that, Ed Filone?
I think an early June recall election is not too late. I think the concern was that it got pushed back too far. And in particular, I think Democrats didn't want all the college students to have left the state by the time of the election. But moreover, I mean, you know, the recall provisions in the Constitution only work if you don't delay the recall election too far after the petitions are signed. It's intended to be a relatively rapid process. So, I think it's an acceptable date. No one seems too upset one way or the other on it.
Mm-hmm. Margaret Farrell?
Well, I think, you know, coming from his law side, I would say, you know, he would agree delayed justice is no justice. There's so I agree with him on that. I agree with the date. I think it's amusing that we don't want to lose our out-of-state college students to determine what should happen here long-term in the state of Wisconsin. I find that, thank you for admitting that, but I think you're wrong. I think they're going to be gone. Most of them are going to be gone before the month of June begins, quite frankly. Maybe not at Marquette, but I think so. And I think that's amusing. I think if it has to happen and we know it's going to happen, I think that the dates are just fine, as long as everything is up on the same day. Again, $9 million to do this. Think of what $9 million worth of programming could do in the state. And instead, they want local government budgets, having not really prepared. Some have, because they kind of knew the handwriting on the wall. But local government budgets to find $9 million. Some of that is probably state, because we have our Government Accountability Board, which I give another nickname to, but I won't mention it, having to do an awful lot of extra work, admittedly.
Let me jump in with another but somewhat related issue. The Government Accountability Board did announce this week for the first time, put an official number on the number of signatures submitted to recall Governor Walker, and they said it was 930,000 or so. Not the 1 million that Democrats said that they had collected when they turned in the petitions. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel did a PolitiFact rating and said that, you know, the Democratic Party falsely said that 1 million signatures had been collected in the recall effort. Ed Filone, do you think that deserved a mostly false rating?
I don't think any intelligent person cares about PolitiFact in this state, quite frankly. It's a ridiculous thing. It should have been dropped a long time ago. I just don't understand PolitiFact. It's just a joke. I think the most significant thing here is the recall is a constitutional right. We don't put a price tag on our rights. I don't hear people saying that it's too expensive to have to register handguns so that people can exercise their constitutional right to carry arms, and that we shouldn't spend money to allow them to do that. The constitutional right, you don't put a price tag on. Secondly, I'm tired of these assaults on our independent institutions like the Government Accountability Board. This is an independent institution. It's staffed with retired judges. They're appointed by a supermajority of the legislature. It was created to keep politics out of it. And I'm tired of every time someone exercises an independent voice, they get attacked and undermined. And we have to stop this, because these institutions are important and we have to maintain their integrity.
Mara Farrell.
Couldn't agree more that we have to stop attacks on our institutions and individual voices. My concern is this all erupted as a result of the national union leaders who were scared to death things were going to start coming back to the middle from the far left in the manner in which they were controlling our public employee costs and our public employee primarily work rules. This wasn't, unfortunately, begun in Wisconsin. It was begun outside of Wisconsin as a result of what Governor Walker did to try to not raise taxes and get our budget spent, our sponging and our budget under control. So I'm with you completely, Ed, in terms of individuals should have a right to be heard.
Let me bring in a caller, Dave in Wanakee. Go ahead, Dave.
Yes, hello. I'd like to point out a fact that hasn't got too much publicity. The Government Accountability Board checked the signatures. They found 3% were questionable. I think that has implications in voter ID, because if we've only got a 3% rate on something as complex as checking recall signatures, then we're spending way too much money on checking for voter fraud at the local level.
You know, this brings up a big story with the Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen this week saying he is appealing to court decisions. A Dane County judge this week said that the voter ID bill violated the state's constitution, that it was unconstitutional, and he put a permanent block on the state's voter ID bill. Ed Filone, you first on where voter ID is going in Wisconsin.
It's going to the Wisconsin Supreme Court eventually, and as it should. This is a question of the right to vote as guaranteed by the Wisconsin Constitution, and it needs to be decided by our highest court. My only concern here is that Van Hollen wants to expedite review and go straight to the Supreme Court. And we've seen before what happens when we get a rushed process and the Supreme Court tries to hurry along. There's a reason why you go through appellate stages. You go to the Court of Appeals, you get another set of eyes on it, another opinion, and so by the time the issue gets to the Supreme Court and they're doing their most important job, which is interpreting our state constitution, they have a wide range of interpretations and opinions in front of them, and they can make a fully informed decision. I think it's right that they decide, but I don't want this to be a rushed process.
Mm-hmm. Margaret Farrell.
Well, I think the complication is we have some of our most major elections, including this demanded recall election coming up in this calendar year. I don't think we've ever had, and I don't know, Ed, maybe you have better research, I don't think we've ever had a year in Wisconsin with this many elections. So I'm concerned that we don't get, if this isn't clarified and we don't know what we're doing, it's going to put us in a very dangerous situation in terms of where we are with that bill. But I guess with the caller, I'd go back to this 3% number that he's having a problem with, that he thinks, in my understanding of what he said, doesn't make this rise to the importance that it perhaps should. First of all, I don't know. We wouldn't have had the computerization of the list if it hadn't been for Judge Davis, who got them on that road, even though later his decision was vacated, as I understand it. So we had them the list computerized as a result of that. I'm not sure who was found to be an invalid signature and how far they went in truly checking those, because we know several other groups, granted on the other side of the political spectrum, checked them and found many more that were duplicates, were questionable, were not found to be adequate. So I'm not sure of the GAB numbers, but given, let's say it's 3%, we have had statewide elections determined with less than 3%. I think it's wrong to look at that as a very minimum number.
Yeah.
So,
let me switch subjects. We're giving it a little bit of short shrift, but there were two big Southern primaries this week, Mississippi, Alabama. Rick Santorum won both of them. Newt Gingrich is being called on to get out of the race, as he didn't do very well at all. Your thoughts on the latest in the race for President, Margaret Farrell, for the GOP nomination?
Well, I guess if a candidate has the money and the intestinal fortitude to keep moving forward, it's the candidate's decision. Looking at his or her real opportunities to win anywhere, and so I guess that's a debate for some other group of people or individual, and I think the whole exercise is proving that we vet our candidates well. To say, oh my goodness, we're going from March into April perhaps with no determination, good news, that gives Wisconsin a role in the decision making, that's fine. But it's my memory that 4 years ago the Democratic side of the aisle went into June with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama at each other trying to get a final answer as to who was going to be the candidate for their party.
Yeah, Ed Filone, just 30 seconds, sorry, on your thoughts on the presidential race.
I'll wrap it all up for you. The GOP presidential race shows that the Republican Party is determined to maintain its status as the party of older white males, to the exclusion of younger brown population and women. And as long as they keep doing that and they refuse to modify their positions, they're going to need to resort to gerrymandering election districts and voter ID to try and lower turnout.
Well, we'll hold it there for now. It's time to reveal the answer and the winner of our Week in Review quiz. What did President Obama give British Prime Minister David Cameron when he visited the White House this week? Well, he gave him a grill. So congratulations to Randy and Nakusa, who is our quiz winner. It was actually a $1,900 grill that can burn charcoal and wood along with a smoker, and it's a big one too, apparently. Maybe he'll be able to use it this weekend if he were in Wisconsin. Thanks to Ed Filone and Margaret Farrow for joining us. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great weekend. Talk to you again on Monday morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.